The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. You know, folks, I've met a lot of people in my life named Eric. My mailman's named Eric. The guy that cleans my pool is named Eric. And truth be told, I used to be named Eric myself. But Eric, you know who, didn't like me being another Eric, too, and said if I wanted to be his announcer, I had to change my name to Todd. Ugh, I hate the name Todd. What parent would ever name their kid Todd? It's so generic. But I needed the money, my kids gotta eat, and now here's the other Eric, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, Todd, look, we pay you, all right? So shut up.
Shut up.
Right, Albin?
Yeah.
Hey, come on, Todd.
Shut up.
Well, you know what? I sympathize because Todd really is such a generic name. No, what loving parent would name their kid Todd?
Don't know.
Actually, everybody knows we're joking. Todd Wilkerson's parents who, look, Don Wilkerson, his father married me and Suzanne.
Wow.
And he and his wife.
Are the three of you happy?
They are loving parents. Ha, ha. They are loving parents. And they named him Todd. So Todd must be a wonderful name. It's just that most of humanity doesn't accept that.
No.
Okay, Todd, we're sorry. Listen, folks, this is hour two. You know what you could tell us hour two?
Why?
You can't. You can't. It just seems fresh. It's like present tense. It's, you know, but it is hour two. In our first hour, we talked to John Zmierich. In this hour, we're talking to a musical duo. No, it's not the Captain and Tennille.
No, it's not.
It is the band Skillet.
Right. There's four of them in the band,
but we got
the married couple.
We got the main couple.
John and Corey Cooper.
If you've never heard of the band Skillet, stay tuned. And we did a video interview with them, too. You can see it on the YouTube channel, which is at Eric Metaxas Show YouTube channel. Okay. So in our first hour, I was sharing about when I was at Camp of the Woods in the Adirondacks. And then I said, in this hour, I need to share a little bit. Because it's Friday, I want to kind of tell people what's cooking. I was in Greece last week. We're filming a documentary on the discovery of the tomb of Odysseus. Mm-hmm. Most people think Odysseus, that's a fictional character, isn't it? Well, yeah, except a lot of times fictional characters in poems and in fiction are, you know, based on historical figures. And in this case, the way it was discovered that this is the tomb of Odysseus has to do with this idea that Homer was not just making stuff up. You're able to trace these place names in the text of the Odyssey and the Iliad. He describes where Ithaca is, and there's little pieces. It's like a puzzle, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of like a really cool story when you tell the story. But my friend Makis Metaxas, no relation. When I found out he had my last name, I thought, was this a joke? No. It's the Metaxas family, not related to us, in Cephalonia.
Wow.
So it's a popular Greek name. I mean, it's not hugely popular, but it's probably like Kennedy or something. Like you know, it's possible that you'll meet more than one. But anyway, he figured this out in 1990 with his wife, Hetty. She's Dutch, and they were in Holland visiting her relatives, and something came on Dutch TV. How many people here watch Dutch TV?
Show of hands.
Nobody.
Show of hands.
Nobody.
Somebody in the back.
How many watches Dutch TV? Nobody watches Dutch TV. But in 1990, if you were watching Dutch TV around Christmas time, this documentary came on by a guy claiming to have discovered Homeric Ithaca. And he goes into these explanations. There was a book that came out with it. So my friend Makis and his wife Hetty, who's Dutch, got the book and started reading it because they live in Cephalonia. They're like, we want to figure this out. And as they read it, they discovered, you know what? He's made some mistakes, and they figured out that his theory was flawed.
Mm.
But it sucked them into the story so much that they began to figure out, like, well, okay, what might be right? If Homer was writing about an actual place, where would that place be? Now, a lot of people don't know this, but I may have mentioned this on the air yesterday, but Heinrich Schliemann, he was a German in the 19th century. He was convinced that Homer was writing about real places and real events, basically. We're not going to claim that Circe and the Cyclops really existed, but the topography, the geography, I should say, and the basics of the stories were true. And that there were figures like Agamemnon and Mycenae.
Well,
and so
Popeye
on and so
the
forth.
Sailor Man is based on the Cyclops. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know okay. that. The Sea Hag is based on the Sirens. But anyway, so the reality is that Machis started with his wife Hetty figuring this out. They figured out that the cave of Melisande in Cephalonia, it's a glorious, glorious cave. You've never seen anything like it in your life. It's a lake cave, beautiful. The sunlight comes in because the ceiling fell in about 100,000 years ago, and they've never been able to raise the funds to repair it. So it's still, the sun still gets through. But it's so beautiful, and they figured out that's Cave of the Nymphs. And anyway, not everybody buys the theory, but I looked into it extensively, and I am satisfied that not only is it true, but it's kind of paradigm-shifting in Homeric studies. And in in a way in history, because to be able to say that something, that a poem from events 1,300 years ago was at least in many details true is really fascinating and counterintuitive, and it kind of bucks the establishment and the consensus, as my cousin Yungo says. So it's a really fascinating story. But when they figured out this puzzle, Machis said, hey, there has to be archaeological proof. When Schliemann went to Troy in the 1880s or 1870s, he found ancient Troy. When he went to Mycenae, he found ancient Mycenae. He found these places from that era, but he never found anything in Ithaca. And Machis said, hey, if Homeric Ithaca is on this island of Cephalonia, and if this is the harbor described, then there's got to be something here. So he looked and looked and looked, and he actually found the largest Mycenaean era tomb in western Greece.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, you know, this is the proof. But it goes on from there. I'm just sketching this out. So I'm working on a book on this. We're working on this documentary. But we had the joy. I went over there with our friend Seth Ward, who's directing this, and my nephew Andrew Wolf Mearns. And we went over there, and we wanted to talk to an archaeologist. I mean, eventually we have to talk to several archaeologists. But just this time, we said we got to talk to one archaeologist. And the guy who did the dig in 1992... Mm-hmm. He's a legend, Lazarus Kolonas. He's never talked about this publicly, never published about it. Really infuriating to me. I'm thinking, like, this guy needs to publish, you know. So we're trying to talk to other archaeologists. And the last day that we were there, he consented to speak with us on camera.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, it is I don't want to, like, give away the whole story, but oh, my goodness. And we had to take a ferry from Cephalonia all the way to Kyllini, which is the mainland, to speak with him. And, you know, one of the clear points about proving that Cephalonia is Homeric Ithaca is it's always described as clearly seen Ithaca. In other words, you could see it from everywhere. It was famous. It was famous for the mountain, for the whatever. And it describes Cephalonia to a T. There's a mile-high mountain on this Greek island, right? And none of the other islands around there have anything comparable to it. But you can see it clearly from the mainland.
Mm.
It's like... So you begin to understand why it's described constantly as clearly seen Ithaca, because no matter where you are, there it is.
Yeah,
You know, it's not. But it there's so much to it, and it was extraordinary. And so we're working on that. But this is going to be, how can I put this? This is going to be newsworthy and earth shattering, because every time somebody claims to have discovered the Palace of Odysseus or something like that, based on almost nothing, the newspapers are all over it,
yeah.
And then it just evaporates. And we've seen some of those places. They're kind of pathetic. But the news is, like, so hungry for, like, they found the real Odysseus, too. They found the da-da-da-da. Well, we even went to Ithaca, to modern-day Ithaca, to the places where we know that are in fact not the places described, but just to kind of compare, right? Like the Cave of the Nymphs in this is in my newsletter. I'm posting a picture of it. The Cave of the Nymphs in Ithaca. I thought, what is the Cave of the Nymphs in Ithaca? And my cousin, I think I said it yesterday, he says, it's a cave. Like, it's nothing. It's just a cave.
Yeah.
And you go and you look at it and you go, that's it? Like, this is Homer's famous Cave of the Nymphs? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So the pieces begin to fall together. But a lot of people will be skeptical until they kind of get the whole story, which they will in the documentary, which will come out as soon as we can make it. And I'm, as I said, I'm writing this book about it. But, oh, my gosh. And actually, I should mention, too, that my book, Seven More Men, is coming out next spring. We're just finalizing the manuscript on that.
Excellent.
Seven More Men, published by Zondervan.
All right.
Yeah, that's a Dutch term. Mm. Everything's coming up Dutch.
Mm.
Everything's coming up tulips. Okay, when we come back, we're talking to Skillet, John and Corey Cooper, and their performing tattoos. Stay tuned. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. 65, I was 17. Hello, or Elton John. That's because it's the music of the guests I have in the studio. Skillet, welcome to the program.
Thank you. What's up?
You guys are just half of Skillet. You're John and Corey Cooper, but there are four of you in the band, but in the studio we can only accommodate two. But you guys are the founders, correct?
Yeah, we are.
And you're married?
Yes.
How many years married?
22.
22?
Yes.
You got kids?
Yes.
How many?
Two kids?
16 and 13.
All right.
Girl and a boy.
That's the most important stuff to, you know, to get out of the way. And you live?
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's a hard rocking state.
Yeah, that's where we're laughing. It's not very likely, but yes, Wisconsin is where we live.
Well, I really do. I want to get your story because there are tons of people watching right now. They know you. They know all about you. But there are tons of people who don't know anything about you. And I guess let's... I want to get into the idea of what does it mean, you know, to be a rock band that's either secular or Christian or faith-based. But I want to get into that. But first, I want to get your story. So how did you – well, where did you meet?
All right. Let's see. We met actually through – I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. And so we had basically friends, mutual friends that we ended up meeting. They said, I think that you'd really like this other girl that we knew basically that plays in a band and sings. And I played in my own band. And so,
you were in Memphis. And
yeah.
where were you, Corey?
I was in Wisconsin.
You were in Wisconsin. So – and you matchmaking was like across the country or
it was mutual friends. I was friends with his pastor and pastor's wife, and so they were like, come on down and visit us.
And they heard that he was looking for a girl with purple hair.
Isn't everybody
grows
now, I assume, because my wife told me to do that, I should always assume that that's your natural color. I would never want to accuse you of dyeing your hair. So I assume that's an amazing
thing.
It's
all natural.
Does it run in your family?
It does. Everybody's purple.
Amazing.
Yep. Her lips are that color, too, naturally.
It's amazing.
She's like
amazing.
A My Little Pony.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember those toys.
Little kids do like it.
Okay, so you guys met when you met sometime in the 90s, I guess?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Skillet originally started... Corey was not actually in the group at first. It was me and two other guys.
Yeah.
And Skillet was a side project of different bands. It was actually just for fun. And my pastor at my church said, hey, John, I think that you would enjoy writing music with this other guitar player from this other band and find a drummer. And it'd be like cooking, throwing everything into a skillet from all these different bands and write some songs.
Did the pastor say it would be like a skillet?
Yeah. And it was kind of a joke.
Aren't you glad he didn't say like a paella?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Because how would you like for the last 20-something years?
I usually say crock pot.
Paella.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, when we get done with this, I'm going to look up the definition of paella.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd like it as a band name.
Yeah, you don't care.
I feel pretty sure.
People from Wisconsin don't need to know about that. All right. So seriously, so you were a musician, and this kind of just happened.
Yeah. I'd been in several bands. Corey had been in several bands, and I ended up starting this side project really to do outreach for my church at like college campuses and stuff like that.
So you were a Christian as a young person. It's not something that happened recently.
No. I was a Christian. My parents were Christians. I was raised in the church.
Yeah.
Gave my life to Christ when I was five. And
so obviously you got the tattoos before that.
Yeah, yes, yeah, it was very early. They had to sign a waiver.
When you were five, that is so cute.
Oh, man, yeah, my mom was a radical follower of Christ.
Yeah.
Taught me about the Bible ever since I was a kid. Corey also, Corey's is a PK, so she her dad was a got saved in the 70s.
Yep, charismatic movement in the 70s. He got saved, and they my parents just lived it. And so I grew up kind of watching them. Like,
so PK,
this is real.
People who know what PK means, that's like one of those shibboleths, right? Like, if you know what that means, that tells you that you're part of a certain group. But you're a pastor's kid or a preacher's kid. So, and that was in the South,
in
Tennessee. I'm sorry, you're from
South,
he's from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So your parents came to faith in like that 70s, whatever.
Yep.
Or maybe earlier. I don't know when they came to
faith. Yeah, 70s.
No, in the 70s, yep.
Yeah.
And got radically saved,
yes.
Her parents, radically saved. And
life changed. I mean, they were always helping people. We always had people living with us, five kids in my family. So whatever they could do, they were doing. And I'm like, you know, this is real. So I became a Christian when I was five, too. I'm like,
wow, really?
Yeah.
So
I never
both
had the crazy PK rebellion either. I just thought,
you know,
I just want to live for Jesus. It's, so
but
somebody show me how.
As a parent, right, like I want to say that whenever people say that, well, all kids, you know, go through this thing, and I think, no, they don't. There are some, many that don't, and that they just know it's real. And, you know, we all have our ups and downs as people.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But the fact is, you know, it's kind of like saying, like, I went through my flat earth period. You don't need to go through a flat earth period. Like you can have a lot of crazy thoughts, but you can know, like, the basic truth about the spherical nature of the earth.
Right.
You know, you don't have to go through that. In college, I was experimenting with flat earth. So
I'm going to borrow that, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
If
you can
don't
steal
mind.
It. Go
I
and
like
steal
that.
It. I don't mind. But it's just kind of funny that the two of you were serious about your faith as kids.
It's funny because there are some similarities between our stories when we met that were interesting like that, and that our parents led us to the Lord, and we each had a real passion for music, had a passion for evangelism. I love evangelism. I wanted to tell about this great relationship with God that I had, that God knows my name. Couldn't believe that he would care about me, but I wanted to do that through music, because music brings people together, and it music, I think, is one of the best things we have in this whole earth. And
I think it actually proves that we're different than, you know, the other animals, because sometimes you listen
exactly,
to some music
yeah.
and you think, how does that not touch your soul? It is
yes.
just there's no way to describe it. And if you really get down to it, you can be really trippy thinking about what is it.
Right.
Like, what is going on? Like, what is, music is just.
I agree.
And did you know from a little kid that you wanted to do music? And the same with you, Corey?
Well, for me, my mom was a piano teacher. I have a funny story that you might find interesting, which is that I'm in the Bible Belt. And so when I first heard rock music, my mom was a piano teacher and a voice teacher. Five or 6 years old, I first heard Michael Jackson, Beat It, at my friend's house, and I came home and sang it to my mom and got like a holy butt whooping for singing the devil's music. And so rock
exactly.
and roll was outlawed, drums outlawed,
right.
guitars, couldn't wear black, you know, and I'm paying them back pretty good now.
Yeah.
I got all that going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was very much raised in that, went to several Bill Gothard seminars growing up. If you remember that time of life.
Hey, I was talking to Bill Gaither on the phone like a month ago, and we're going to get him on this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Bill Gaither, Bill Gothard.
No, I don't know Bill Gothard.
Oh, okay. Bill Gothard was a famous preacher at the time, but his big platform ended up becoming how Christian rock was wolves in sheep's clothing, and that was his big, big thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he actually had a lot of great stuff,
Institutes
for Bible Living that I liked, but I was just like, man, these people are crazy about Christian rock being evil, and I always had a passion for Christian music.
I wouldn't call it evil. Some of it's just bad. But it's not evil. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference between evil and bad. So
that's very good.
So
too.
you can borrow all this stuff. So you were raised in a musical family.
Yeah, that's right.
And what about you?
Not really so much. My kindergarten teacher told my parents that my sister and I should get some kind of music lessons. So they asked me what I wanted to play, and I said, well, piano and guitar. And they said, we'll start you on piano,
at,
then, I guess.
At age five?
Yeah, is that kindergarten
piano
age?
Piano and guitar?
Yeah, I guess I like
that's pretty sophisticated. Most five-year-olds would say recorder.
Yeah, PlayStation. Yeah.
That's the cool. That's the recorder is like the cool instrument at age five. Okay, so and Corey, you at what point did you begin to take music more seriously?
I was probably around, you know, 12, 13, and I thought, I want to know what God has for my life. It was a whole theme of, like, everybody has a destiny in the church. I'm like, what's my destiny? I want to know what I want to do. And I don't really care what it is. As long as God uses me, I'm cool with it. So, and then I felt like God speak to me about doing something in music, which I didn't know what that meant. I mean, on a big scale, on a small scale, I don't care. If I'm worship leader at my church, I'm happy for it. If I'm just doing an outreach band, I'm happy for it. However he wants to use me, that's cool. And if it's a big scale, that's cool, too. Whatever he wants. And so then I just started focusing on writing and playing and all the stuff because I really love music. To me, it's like the best language for me to communicate how I feel.
And what genre of music were you involved in before, you know, you met John?
Yeah, more mellower, kind of probably more like alt-y, alt-pop.
But isn't basically any music mellower than the
then
music
Skillet?
Yeah. Right? Like, how could you be less mellow? Anyway, that's and were you drawn to the kind of music that you make now from the beginning?
Oh yeah, definitely. When I first heard what I would call metal, you know, heavy metal, Metallica and Iron Maiden and all those bands. Yeah. Oh yeah, I loved it. It was like instantly felt my life had changed. You know, I was in about 6th grade and my friend we were just getting into like the idea of working out. It was the 80s, so everybody wanted to be like Rambo and he's like, man, I got this weight bench, you know, we had like, you know, these little 5 pound
and he's like, gotta crank the metal.
He's like, you got to hear this. And he turned on Metallica and I was sold.
And a star was born. We got to go to a break. We'll be right back, folks. I'm talking to half of Skillet.
I never let you see. I keep a cage, but I can't control it. So stay away from me. The beast is ugly. I feel the rage, and I just can't hold it. It's scratching on the walls.
You may recognize that song as Monster. I do not. But it is Monster. And I gotta say, Monster remains one of the most streamed rock songs of all time. The band behind it, Skillet, is with me in the studio. They are one of the best-selling rock bands of the 21st century. That's this century. Multi-platinum. They've sold over 12 million albums worldwide. Last year, 2018, they clocked 1 billion Spotify streams, 2 Grammy nominations, Billboard Music Award for the double platinum album, Awake, yada, yada, yada. Here they are. I mean, that is a lot of success. That is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And you have a new album called Victorious coming out in August.
Yeah.
Very soon. That's exciting. Is that why you're here? You're like promoting? Are you in promotion mode now?
We're always in promotion mode, but yes, we are promoting the new record. Yeah, right now. That's why we're here.
Now, these are some big numbers, and I think that the people who are managing money are skimming off the top. I really just want to tell you right now. Just want to tell you right now because you should have enough money by now to be able to have all those tattoos removed. I'm serious because I know you don't want to. You don't want to grow old with those tattoos, do you?
Oh,
do you? Because that's permanent. Do you understand? Yeah. They're permanent. They probably didn't tell you that, right?
No, I was unaware that they were permanent.
Yes. You could change the color of your hair just like that, but the tattoos are permanent. Well, you know what? That's why I wear the long sleeve stuff. I got a lot of nasty tats.
You got a lot of I bet you got some Skillet tattoos.
Yeah,
under
they're kind of nasty, like flaming skulls and like, you know, snakes and stuff. And I just don't like, that's not part of my image anymore.
No.
So that's why I wear the long sleeves.
Yeah. All right.
But at the beach, I'm a wild man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right. We got to talk about this. So your story, it's kind of cool. So you meet, you're doing different kind of music than you are at that time. At what point, I mean, was your initial interest in each other romantic, or was it music, or was it both immediately? How did that happen?
Romantic, yes. That was the first. We were never planning on playing music together. In fact, when we first got married, she still had her music going. I was doing mine. And we went through a transition in the band where we wanted to add some keyboards in. We were going to be changing some things around. And I was like, well, Corey could do it. It means you have to quit her band. You know, I don't think we ever saw this happening.
We really did. I mean, initially when we knew he, like, Skillet got signed by a label, so we were like, okay. But we talked about how we didn't want to be separated. So a lot of families do that where the wife's at home and the guys on the road are like, we just don't really want to do that. So I jumped in the van and was their merch girl.
Yeah.
So we were together.
Whoa. Yeah. You were their merch girl?
I was their merch girl.
Do you think that, you know, like, civilians like me know what merch girl means? I think you mean you sold the merchandise for the band.
It means you live in a van with like four other dudes and you don't sleep and you just show up and
it's
unload.
I promise
it's all hands on deck.
But you know what? That's the kind of wife every guy is looking for. Like if you're willing to do that, they're like, she's all in. You're totally all in.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So then when they added keys, it was like, she's already out here and she's free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't have any money. I mean, and nobody was getting
I got $2
much.
A day for per diem. That was it.
She doesn't eat much. That's all she needed. She needed like a stick of gum. And,
right. Yeah.
You know,
if you're really
an almond.
If you're struggling financially, you don't want to marry a big woman. You want to marry a small woman. Yeah. She eats very little. You know, keep it lean and mean, and then later on you can gorge.
That's exactly right.
So you guys.
That's exactly right.
So you suddenly now when did you married in 97?
97. Yeah. So we got married about 3 months after Skillet's first record came out.
Uh-huh.
We got married and went on the road, and about 6 months after that is when Corey kind of joined the band.
Right.
And then me and Corey ended up writing the music. So that was in 1997.
Yeah.
Married in 97. She came on the road in 97.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty healthy. I think that might keep the marriage together.
We still like each other.
It's been 22 years. I think you're doing okay.
I think we're all right,
the
baby.
The first 22 years are definitely the hardest.
Right.
My wife and I are 23 right now.
Right.
And I think, like, up till now, it's been kind of tough. But, like, suddenly, you know, once you crack that 22 number, that magic number. So you guys are good.
We're good.
You're
good. All good.
Good. I feel good now.
It's kind of funny, though, because when you think of, like, rock stars or musicians on the road and stuff, it seems like such an unhealthy environment for relationships. So it's the fact that you're both in the band, obviously. There's something very healthy about that, whatever. You're together.
There is, you know, and we have two kids that have toured with us ever since they were born
How old are the kids?
They're 16 and 13.
Wow. They have like a Partridge Family thing going.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah, it's just that we're better looking. But it's exactly like that.
I want to be your Reuben Kincaid. I want to wear like a beige turtleneck and just stand in the wings and just go like this.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. No, that is so cool. But so your kids are they're old enough to be into music, obviously themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So are they, or what are they?
They are now. They don't realize how awesome we are.
Yeah.
But
the kids never do.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But they've had it really cool. They've toured with everybody. You know, they played with Alice Cooper Metallica.
People don't know that Alice Cooper is a serious Christian.
He really is.
Unbelievable.
I don't know him well.
I still have to get him on this program because I just find that fascinating.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
When I met him, I did ask him. I said, "Everybody always says that you're a Christian. Yeah. Is that actually accurate?" And he's
and
like,
"He punched you."
Yeah, he ate me, you know, like a bat.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Ozzy.
That was Ozzy.
Yeah, it was Ozzy, not Alice Cooper.
No. Alice Cooper is a lot cooler than Black Sabbath. I think Black Sabbath was kind of a little nastier than Alice.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking, what are we talking about? So
awesome stuff.
Awesome stuff.
Kids on the road.
We're out of time. We're going to be right back. Stick around.
Get on my back, lone survivor lass. They got me in.
John and Corey Cooper, who are half of the band called Skillet. Got to ask you, just because I know everybody's thinking it, have you ever been compared to ABBA?
No.
Okay.
But I like
ABBA. No, but awesome.
So maybe that's just me.
Yeah.
But you're Swedish, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like meatballs, Swedish meatballs.
I got to ask you, you have opened for a lot of bands that are where there's no faith, you know, involved, and you've got, mm-hmm. you've been criticized for that. And people often, you know, like people who are very serious about their faith, oftentimes get very confused, just like your mom did, thinking that, you know, Michael Jackson's music is the devil's music. People don't have a good theology about art sometimes, and Christians can be really bad about that. And I know you've been involved in a lot of that mm-hmm. kind of controversy. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I see it sort of like I see anything else in the Christian life, which is that if you're a plumber, you don't only plumber for Christian folks.
Right.
Or whatever.
You don't? Be ye separated, my brother. No. You don't install pipes, okay, for the devil's people. Come on, yes, man. And so, the pipes themselves should be saved. It's just, come on.
Yes.
Are your guitars Christian?
Yes.
Okay. And the amps have some kind of faith?
Yes.
Right, because then it's Christian music. It's that simple. Okay. But so what bands have you opened up for that you've gotten a lot of criticism for?
Well, I mean, sometimes we get criticism just for the fact that all of our songs are not overtly religious.
Right.
Sometimes we sing love songs, or we sing a song that, well, that song was called Hero. Could it be about Jesus, or could it be about a girl?
Right,
you know,
right.
they're very like that. And I think the art is really cool to be subjective.
Yeah.
And I like film, for instance. I like films that don't preach to me, but they can have a great message to it, and I can take it the way I want to.
Right.
And film can change my mind about politics, can change my mind about stuff, and that's what we try to do.
Well, like Mary Poppins or Sound of Music never mentions Jesus, but I watch them. They're not Christian films.
No.
They're clearly of the devil. They don't mention Jesus. actually, you guys must know, like, this controversy, you know, that only Christian musicians have experienced has been going on forever, right? And I'm trying to think. It wasn't Keith Green. It was Phil Kagi. Came out with with an album called The Master and the Musician. Do you know about this?
I know Phil Kagi, but
okay.
I don't know where
you're
going.
Check this out. This is crazy, right? So he's doing all this great Christian music, and then he blows people's minds by coming out with an instrumental album.
Yes.
And people are like, how could it be a Christian album because there's no Christian lyrics?
Right.
Like it's funny to me.
Yeah.
Like it's absolutely funny that people have such a poor sense of, you know, when you label something Christian. Is that a Christian apple? Is that a Christian mug?
Yes.
Is that a Christian, you know, and all beauty is of God and whatever. But has that been hard on you? Have things gotten better over the years? Because some people
are
just
much
very
better.
Pharisaical, and they don't get it.
But much, much better than they used to be. And I think that for us, what it means to be a Christian band isn't that every song is even necessarily about Jesus. Now, every song is religious, might not have lyrics, as you said. To us, what makes it Christian is who we are. It's the way we act on stage and the way we act off stage. It's what we talk about in the song. It's being a light to the world. And we're very passionate about that. And most of the criticism has kind of gone away. It's like some people are never going to be convinced. And I don't try to convince them.
No.
You know, they wouldn't like the way I look because they don't like, you know, cool dudes. You know what
That's
I'm
right.
saying?
Jesus didn't have a nose ring. What's up with that?
I don't know.
You know what I'm
taxes.
Saying? Yeah, exactly. No, but it is kind of funny, though, because like you realize that Christians of the religious variety can be cruel and they don't know what they're talking about. Because if they're right, they're right. But in this case, they're not right.
Sure.
And all beauty and all goodness is of God. And sometimes we kind of try to insist that it have this Christian packaging.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it kind of hit me a few years ago, both of us, 10 years ago, that Christian music was mainly being listened to by Christian people. And I think a lot of the goal of Christian music was always to win the world to Christ. And so I thought, you know, maybe we need to have some songs that aren't just about Jesus. Otherwise, people don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So that's what we try to do with our music if we can.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's called evangelism.
It is called evangelism.
I think Jesus is pro-evangelism. Don't you think?
Is.
I kind of get that idea from the New Testament.
Sure, sure.
Maybe I'm wrong
And
about
a lot
that.
Of bands that we tour with on the rock side of things, there's always quite a few of the musicians that grew up in youth groups. And they've gotten as far away from the church as they can, and then we show up. And a lot of times we've actually played at their youth group because we've been around for so long, and they're like, oh, my word, Skillet is here. And within a couple of weeks, it's like, I walked away from God, whether it be their experience of somebody judging them or hypocrisy that they've seen or whatever it is, choices that they've made, and they feel like God hates them people hate them. Mm-hmm. People are mean. Christians are mean. And then they see us and we're just normal. We have a good marriage. Our kids are really nice. And that sometimes is just the salt and the light that they need. Be like, okay, maybe my experience was a little bit skewed. Maybe those people were mean, but that's not the way Jesus is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's so wonderful. That's a little bit of what Brian Head Welsh shared with me, that on the on the circuit out there, you meet people and you get to share with people that would not be interested, if you didn't look the way you do. They would just kind of turn you off right away. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Very similar. We toured with Brian a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah. He is so wonderful. I just love him. Just a good guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people gave him tremendous criticism when he went back to Korn, as you know.
Yeah.
Like, how can you be there and how can you be doing what you're doing and stuff? So when you write a song that is not overtly Christian, it just strikes me that you're making art, right? And art can be beautiful and, it points to God even if it doesn't do so overtly.
Yeah.
But you really are, you're rare, I guess, in that you do both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do think it's kind of hard to do both because people like things in boxes. You know, we like to understand what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so I think that Skillet is a band that's been able to do both because I think our biggest selling point is we're very authentic. We don't try to cater to this or try to cater to this. We go, hey, this is who we are, and it's kind of like no apologies about it. And when we sort of crossed over to rock music, a lot of people said, hey, you should maybe not say you're from the Christian market. If somebody says, are you a Christian band? Say no. And we've always said, yeah, that's where we're from. It's who we are.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that we're real smells good to folks.
Exactly. We're going to be right back. Final segment with John and Corey Cooper, who are half of Skillet.
Help me tonight. I'm closer to the edge.
Drifting beneath the horizon, body's weak but I'm trying to make it to shore, but I'm falling short, I need you more.
Hey there folks, that sounds like the voice of John Cooper, is it? Pretty cool, man.
The soothing sound.
That's really beautiful. Now, is there like 5% auto tuning going on in there?
Nah, more. There's something 55, happening. 55%.
Okay, all right, cool. I've never worked with an auto tuner before. I'm just asking you. Listen, you have this album coming out called Victorious.
So
let's talk about that. It's brand new.
Yeah.
It drops, as the kids like to say.
They do say that, don't they?
Nobody says that. It comes out on August 2nd. So, tell me about this
album. I'd love to tell you about the record. So excited about the record that there's a theme on the album that is this. I think in culture, what it seems like is happening, I think parents, teachers, universities, whatever, are putting this message out, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that life is so awesome and every day is awesomer than the last. And every day you just have to be the awesomest you can ever be. And it's perfect. And it's not true. Life is hard and life is a fight. And so the idea of victorious is that you can be victorious. You can win these battles. Good news for us who follow Christ. The battle belongs to God. So we know we are victorious, but we still got a lot of fighting to do. We still got to get a little dirty. And so the theme of Victorious is fight songs. It's supposed to make you feel inspired to not run away from the fight, but to say, all right, God, I'm ready. Where do you want me? And let's face this. Come on, baby.
That is awesome. Actually, that really is wonderful. That's really wonderful. Victorious sounds like a Christian. Like if I heard that, I would say like that sounds Christian to me, right?
Yeah.
But if you're not a Christian, I don't think you'd pick up on that. It's like one of those things that it's like a word.
That is the essence of Skillet.
Exactly.
That is the essence of our songs, is that you pick up on it and you go, oh, victorious, because we think of Christ being victorious.
Yeah.
You would think of, the victory. He has won the victory. But in the world, you could remind you of Game of Thrones. It could remind you of all these,
Katy Perry.
Yeah, lots of things. So I think that's a cool message.
so it could remind you of the devil's music or good stuff.
It does not remind me of the devil's music at all. No, no.
Okay, so like what is oh my gosh, we've only got about 2 minutes. What is on the album? I know it's songs, but tell me about some of the songs.
Okay, I'd love to. The first single is called Legendary. And this song, Legendary, is it needs to be, and I hope somebody's listening, it needs to be like, you know, the NFL song of the year, all right? Because this song make you want to, like, go in and just destroy in an arena. Fist pumping, you know? It's a good workout song. And Legendary, it's about not giving up. It's kind of funny, ironically enough, about the fact that we will not be legendary. We will probably not be remembered, any of us, in 200 years. It's not about leaving this big legacy. It's about living the life that you want to live now. What has God called me to do? Who has He called me to be? And live every day to try to reach that. So that's the first song, Legendary. And, man, the title track, Victorious, is special to me. Corey and I wrote it together, and it's a song that kind of deals with depression. We have so many fans that reach out to us about dealing with depression, and this is a song that hopefully inspires people to know that they're not alone and that they can make it through these struggles
I've been public about struggling with depression. Depression is so awful, and I always want people to know you're not the only one going through it. Like a lot of people that you'd never know, because I'm not going to act depressed on here, even though I might be.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of people are struggling with that. They need to know how many other people are doing that. So that's
absolutely
good for you.
Absolutely.
We're like out of time. Holy cow. John and Corey Cooper, God bless you. Thanks for doing what you do. And may the Lord bless this album and the rest of your lives and careers. Good to see
Thank
you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Shattered pieces. I can't keep it hidden like a secret.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.